We begin in the soft and non-threatening days of early 1979 when B.B. King was in his ripe mid-50s. The Cold War seemed to be warming up. Iran was our friend back then. It produced a Passover show for Iranian TV to reassure Jews about the future, just weeks before students would overrun the U.S. Embassy in Tehran and take hostages. There was a big agreement on trade reform, and this tune was the top song. Reunited, Peaches and Herb. Into all this tranquility dropped a low-budget movie. It wasn't a horror movie per se.
In the not-too-distant future, there will be no civilization. There will be no heroes.
It wasn't a political movie, really.
You should see the damage.
Bronze, huh? Metal damage.
Brain damage, huh? Ailis and bronze.
I am the Knight Rider. I'm a fuel-injected suicide machine.
It was Australia's vision of a Wild West carved from the industrial breakdown of civilization. Humans fighting back with any rusty machine they could find. Mad Max, filmed by a doctor who staged the violence by using his knowledge from treating car crash victims. It had unknown actors, rusty police cars, people named Toe Cutter and Knight Rider, motorcycles and hacksaws. Mad Max became a cult classic, and it was for decades the world's most profitable film. Director George Miller wanted it to have the feel of a silent film, but unlike the apocalyptic Fritz Lang classic Metropolis, the machines would control nothing. It would be humanity's dependence on machines and what happens when they all break down that would drive this end-of-the-world vision. Mad Max started an end-of-world movie genre that is anything but fringe today, as the latest Mad Max, Fury Road, is released as a big-budget mainstream studio blockbuster.
Oh, what a day! What a lovely day!
Adam Sternberg is the author of the dystopian novels Shovel Ready and Near Enemy. Welcome, Adam.
Hi, thanks for having me.
What did Mad Max begin, do you think, back in the late 70s?
I think it started this fascination we have with exactly what you were talking about, the breakdown of civilization. You know, in the sort of post-atomic age, the idea of a world wiped out was one that I think had really taken grasp of people's imaginations. But Mad Max looked at this idea of what have we built and what would happen if it all falls apart. And that's something that you see repeating again and again to today.
It's really kind of like an end of modernism because Metropolis was really all about the machines taking over and what we've created mastering us. The Terminator is sort of a throwback in that sense. This is really just about what kind of junk could we put together to survive. And it was immediately plausible to people.
Oh, yeah. It's interesting if you look at the dystopian stories that sort of captured people's imagination through the 20th century, there's a real shift from the kind of early dystopias characterized by 1984 and Metropolis, which were about sort of society overgrown and bureaucracy run amok and totalitarianism and sort of ultimate control. And with Mad Max, you saw a shift toward a dystopian vision that was all about loss of control, societal breakdown, and sort of people having to live by these kind of ancient primitive survival skills, which I think many of us fear that we've lost touch with.
And now it's almost like a documentary. I mean, we have an intuitive sense that things are falling apart. We have an intuitive sense that we can't control what we've created. And we do have a sense that we're kind of improvising with junk that's laying around everywhere. Wouldn't you say?
Oh, sure. I mean, the that vision of a world where people are fighting over oil and fighting over water, those are the kind of nightmare scenarios that persist to today. And I think it's telling that that movie came out in the late 70s when you did have the OPEC issue, you did have gas rationing in the U.S., and people started to wake up to the idea that this kind of era of bountiful resources and endless expansion might be coming to an end or might have consequences that we are all going to have to deal with.
But the mainstream view of OPEC was a conspiratorial one, a kind of trilateral commission behind the scenes controlling all of us. The real vision, the revolutionary vision, was Mad Max. And that's what we have today, that no, nothing can be controlled. We run out of this stuff and we humans are just running around like rats in the world. How does this influence your art, your literature?
Well, all of those sort of classic 70s dystopias are movies that I grew up with as a kid. And, you know, Mad Max was a hugely influential film, and you had all these sort of American movies that came out around the same time, like The Warriors and Escape from New York, which were similar sort of imaginings of a kind of post-civilization civilization.
Planet of the Apes is kind of everything falling apart.
Sure, yeah, Planet of the Apes, and you had these science fiction dystopias like Logan's Run and movies like that. And then also growing up in the sort of 70s and 80s, you were still at the tail end of the Cold War when the kind of idea of like planetary annihilation was sort of constantly in the back of your mind, even as a kid. And even though we're not as worried, rightly or wrongly, about that anymore, certainly that kind of ambient anxiety persists. It just seems to kind of be transferred from one new threat to another.
Do you think the mainstream quality of this dystopian vision, and it's an overused word now, which is also a sign of the, you know, the revolution or the apocalypse, whatever you want to say, takes the sting out of the shock value that the original Mad Max has?
I think there's definitely a sense of dystopian fatigue in a way, although clearly these visions have a persistent power because we keep returning to them. I think what's interesting in some of the dystopian visions we see now, as opposed to Mad Max, which really was a kind of hardscrabble fight for survival, there was no real hope in that movie. It's basically one man kind of avenging his family. It's not like at the end of the movie you think, oh, okay, we're all going to be all right.
Right.
Whereas now I think there is a almost kind of fantasy element to a lot of dystopias because our lives have seemingly become so complex and we've become so reliant on different technologies that we barely understand. There's almost a kind of fantasy of, well, what if all that was stripped away and we'd get back to the sort of essentials, we'd get back to kind of interpersonal relationships, we'd get back to cooking our own food over fires and making our own clothes. And I do think that the dystopia has – the edge has been dulled a little bit because it's less a nightmare as it is a kind of alternate scenario of simplicity that has a sort of appeal to us now because we feel like things have become so complicated and difficult to understand.
So the 21st century is about the vegan apocalypse.
I do think there's a sense in which we think it wouldn't be so bad. I mean, there's a comedy on television right now called The Last Man on Earth, which sort of says something about how the idea of being the last person on Earth and kind of walking through this shopping mall that's completely empty and being able to take whatever you want for free, it's become a weird sort of fantasy that we indulge in, even as we worry about zombie plagues and super flus and stuff like that.
Do you have an emergency kit of any kind at your home?
I do not. And I often think that if there was some sort of planetary apocalypse, I would be perfectly happy to go in the first wave. I don't need to be the last man standing.
Do you have any sort of extra set of flashlights, any sort of just-in-case object that represents your little slice of Mad Max?
I do have a flashlight, and I will admit it's not only a flashlight, but it's one of those sort of heavy
Maglites.
Yeah. Because who knows, when the zombies come in the window, you might be able to brain a few of them. But I mean,
and
really,
there are flashlights in Mad Max. There are big, huge, rusty flashlights in Mad Max. Yeah. For me, it's headlamps.
Yes.
Those camping headlamps. I have tons of them just sitting around. My kids wonder. And when the apocalypse happens, I'll put them on and I'll go, kids, follow me.
See, I would think headlamp would be the last thing you'd want to wear because you're basically putting a beacon on your head saying, hey, here I am. Come hunt me down.
You've been there. You've thought
I've thought these things through.
Do you think we are in the apocalypse now, that essentially we are living in a time of uncontrol, and that this Mad Max Fury Road is almost a throwback? It's a bit of history. It's not even envisioning the future.
I definitely think it's a bit of social history. And I think it's funny that we're so obsessed with this dystopian vision of societal breakdown and sort of technological breakdown, while we are simultaneously living in something that's very similar to the previous idea of dystopia of sort of constant surveillance, government overreach. I mean, the kinds of things that the previous generations worried about are the kind of things we're actually facing. And yet we have seemed to have transferred all of our anxieties to a whole new set of circumstances that, in a sense, are probably just a distraction from how dystopian our lives have actually become.
Mad Max, one of its, you know, revolutionary visions was there were no presidents giving addresses. There were no trying to calm the nation from the government. The whole head of civilization had been cut off and thrown away. And I think we have that same kind of feeling that we would never look to those people for any reassurance anymore.
Oh, I think that's definitely true. And you often see in these dystopian visions, they've become much more a story of the common person's, you know, experience of the apocalypse as opposed to the president taking charge and telling everyone what to do. It really comes down to you, your family, and hopefully your broomstick or maglite that's going to, you know, beat back the apocalypse at your door.
Adam Sternberg, author of the novels Shovel Ready and Near Enemy. Thanks so much, Adam.
Thank you.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.